Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for another fun and fur-filled hour of Fervently Speaking, hosted by pet lifestyle and industry expert, top dog Eileen Proctor. Nationally renowned as America's Canine Connections Coach, the top dog has a knack of sniffing out and sharing information about products, services, activities, and news that improve the quality of life for pets and the people who love them, all in an inimitably entertaining style. Whether it's dogs, cats, critters, you name it, the top dog has really got her paws on the pulse of America's pet-loving society. It's time to sit, stay, and pick up your ears for Fervently Speaking, and your host, top dog, Eileen Proctor.
And welcome to the fourth Friday of January, and that means, it's Wednesday, isn't it? Oh my gosh, the days are just passing me by. It is the fourth Wednesday of January, and that means the final hump day of the month, and that means Fervently Speaking on Blog Talk Radio, the Boomer and Babe channel, and I am your host, the top dog, Eileen Proctor, America's Canine Connections Coach and the voice of Pet Rescue. So glad to be with you this week, and I got some beautiful weather here in Phoenix, Arizona. I hope everybody out there is enjoying wherever you are with your pet sitting by your side listening to the great fun and fur-filled information we're going to be giving you today. And we've been talking a lot about New Year's resolutions. I want to, you know, stop being so serious for a little while, as we've been on our previous shows, and talk about a fun topic. I don't know about you out there, but I do consider my fur kids to be my kids. And, of course, what comes with that is photographs. And if anybody sees me on the street, in a restaurant, you know I'm going to be pulling out my smartphone and showing you copious numbers of photographs of my canine kids and my kitty kid, because they are the lights of my life. So that kind of goes with the territory, what we've been dealing with human children and people for such a long time. We are going to get them back by showing them all these great pictures. But, of course, not every picture, no matter how beautiful or sweet or wonderful our pets are, not every picture that I've ever taken, I must admit, has come out perfectly and captured the heart and soul of my pets. Very often, I get them looking funny, the lighting is bad, their eyes are glowing. So today on Fervently Speaking, we are being joined by a professional pet photographer. Her name is Michelle Pellberg of Cow Dreams Photography, and she's going to be sharing the tips and tricks for us amateurs and pet parents of how to take picture-perfect pet photos, regardless of what kind of camera we have. We're also going to find out how to get the fur kids to smile and how to avoid those nasty glow eyes. Now, Michelle is the owner, and I guess she'd be the head photographer over at Cow Dreams Photography. We'll find out how she got the name of that in a little while, because I don't know that I've ever seen any pictures of cows that she has taken. But anyway, she specializes in professional pet portraits. Her company is in Phoenix, Arizona. About 4 years ago, Michelle decided to combine her gift and love for photography with her passion for pets. Now, Michelle believes that in order to capture the true personality of your pet, you need to catch them in their own comfortable environment. So she's got her techniques for making sure that they are looking like the wonderful creatures that they are. We'll hear more about that in a little bit. She works with many local charities, including rescues, shelters, and adoption agencies. And she's also very well-versed at working with shy, skittish, or awkward animals as well. I guess the camera-shy guys, they don't stand a chance with the pet photography whisperer, Michelle Pellberg of Cow Dreams Photography. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure, and I need to ask the most important question. Cow Dreams is spelled CowDreamz. Please take this monkey off my back. Tell me, how did you come up with a name like Cow Dreams Photography?
Actually, it's a pretty funny story. I had decided that I wanted to call it something else, and I had happened to be at dinner with a couple friends, and they start talking about how I needed to market and do research groups and figure out if people even wanted this or if they liked the name, and the two start talking about how to run my business as if I wasn't there. And so I finally got frustrated, and I said, stood up, and I said, you know what? No one's listening to me. This is a moot point. I'm leaving. And as I'm walking out the door, I'm like, moot, moot, moo, 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 cows, moo. And I'm dreaming anyone is ever going to listen to me. So I opened back up the door and said, I have a new name. I hope you're all happy. And I went home.
I love the story. So I have to ask you, were your first clients of the bovine nature?
No, but everyone says, I look, do you only photograph cows? There are no cows.
Yeah, I looked at your website, in fact, which, by the way, if anybody listening wants to look along with me, it's www.cowdreams.com, spelled C-O-W-D-R-E-A-M-Z. Couldn't even spell dreams correctly, could you, Michelle? Dreams with a Z. Is there a reason for that, or just to be cute?
I figured it was in Arizona, which is A-Z.
Oh, my gosh. You are a marketing genius. I tell you, but you have done dogs, cats, you've done farm animals, you've done pets and their people, you've done non-furry animals as well, I understand. Tell us a little bit about your non-human family members.
Oh, boy. I have got two dogs and two cats and two lizards and three snakes and a fish.
Wow. Okay. Are we going to give names, or are we going to leave them as species identification?
I can give names. I have a French bulldog named Henrietta and a pug Yorkie mix named Kai. I have a one-eyed gray.
Wait. Is that a porky? A pug Yorkie? Is that a porky?
That's what we call her.
A porky? Okay, good. I haven't met many porkies, so okay, a porky. Go ahead.
And then we have a one-eyed gray kitty cat whose name is Moxie. And then I've got a 14-year-old black kitty cat whose name is Maudie. Then I've got two red-tail boas. Their names are Nyla and Nagio. And then I've got a Euromastic whose name is Melonhead. And a Stillwater hypo bull snake, and his name is Stillwater. And then I have a Chinese water dragon whose name is Daisy, and a fish that I don't know what kind it is and never gave a name to.
There you go. So fishy. By the way, do the snakes come when you call them by name, or would it not matter what you were referring to them as?
People tell me that they can't hear, but they can feel vibrations, so I would think when I'm talking to them, my vibration of voice would be different than if someone else was, but they don't come. But I'm convinced, you know, they know who I am, because, of course, they're my children, so they have to know who I am.
Right, and you bring them what do they eat, the insects or the eggs? What is it that snakes eat for treats?
Mostly they eat rats and mice.
Okay, so new topic. So here we go. I don't want the rat and mice people to be calling in and protesting, fervently speaking. So let's move on from here. I understand that about 4 years ago you started Cow Dreams Photography, and you, for that reason, could pretty much be known as one of the people that we have on a regular segment here of people whose lives have gone to the dogs. What did you do before you became a professional pet photographer?
Before that, I assistant taught a photography class at one of the local high schools.
Okay.
So I call myself a pet lover who happens to be a photographer. My goal in life was to always figure out how to work with pets, and so I found it via photography.
Yeah, and you do a beautiful job. I'm looking at some of the pictures, even as we're speaking. You've got some beautiful bird shots there, and the peacock shot is absolutely phenomenal. I'm afraid to go look at the dogs right now because I'll start drooling and possibly ruin my computer with the drool. So beautiful, beautiful work that you've got there. You were wondering when you started Cow Dreams if anybody would be listening and wanting your service. So I guess I have to ask you, professional photography in this day and age of really high-quality digital cameras and cell phones, how is business?
I have to say I do feel I compete quite a bit with technology that now basically everyone can get their hands on. I mean, most of the people I run into tell me, oh, it's okay, I've got tons of photos on my iPhone. And I always want to look at them and go, okay, well, that's great, but they're not on your walls. They're not displaying this pet that you love so much. And what happens if your iPhone fails or dies or you lose it? Now you've lost all those photos.
Right, right. I agree with you. And I'm taking a look at, and please, I am 100% focused on you and the show. Please don't get me wrong, but I can't take my eyes off of the photos on cowdreams.com. And I'm seeing one of a turtle or a tortoise, and I can't tell. It's a black and white. But with a iPhone or digital camera, you're not going to get the whiskers or the hair or the pores that I see jumping off my computer screen at me that you can with a professional camera. True or not?
Correct. And I don't think you can get as close either. I think once you get a certain distance, everything starts getting blurry.
Yeah. I know that with mine, sometimes when people take my picture, I'm glad when it's blurry because that's like, you know, instant facelift. You don't see all the wrinkles. But with my pets, I want them to see every detail, every whisker, that gleam in their eyes, and all the other things about them that make me want people to melt when they look at the pictures. And sometimes I get a good picture on my cell phone, but I got to be honest, there's nothing like a professional photograph. But not everybody is in the market for or at this moment can afford or is going to jump for professional photography. So why don't we spend a little bit of time talking about some tips for amateurs or pet owners that are going to be taking pictures on their own. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Cool. Okay. So I guess my first question is, how do you get a dog to smile for a picture? What do you do?
I strongly believe pets, they smile, and they smile all the time. And, you know, they're just like people. When they're happy, they smile. And when they get frustrated, you know, they stop smiling. And so the trick is to let them smile and to just relax. If you're trying to take a picture of them and they're happy and they're doing whatever, then capture that moment. If you then decide you want to move them somewhere else or get a different angle of it, then do that. But just realize they're probably going to stop what they're doing, pay attention to you, and drop whatever facial expression they had. So it's basically capture what you can and just remember they're pets and be comfortable and keep relaxed and keep them relaxed.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know that even myself, and of course, you know me, love my kids, but if I see my dog doing something cute, I run for the camera or the cell phone. I go, wait, Cassie, wait, hold it, stay right there. And the dog's like, what did I do? What did I do wrong? You know, it's like, it's the same thing I say to her if she's chewing on something inappropriate. Not that Cassie would ever do anything bad, by the way, but, you know, and now they're like in a totally different state of focus. And then I'm like, okay, go back to being happy. And they're like, you killed it for me, Mom. But I expect that they'll do the exact same thing. And then I'm standing there with a camera in front of my face, and they're still wondering, like, what happened? When did you grow that thing growing out of the front of your face? So patience and capturing animals when they're doing what they would normally do. So I guess the tip there is also keep a camera handy if you plan on wanting to photograph your pet being themselves, huh?
Right.
Yeah. Now, my dog, Happy, who everybody has heard me talk about so many times, the way to get her to smile is to razz her up, like, you know, it, not that necessarily she's doing anything that she's smiling about, but for me to get her to actually open her mouth and smile with her teeth showing and her tongue slightly out, you know, to have that less serious look. We want them to have that, you know, happy-go-lucky look, because that's what her name is. I need to get her to run around with her toy, okay? So we, you know, we throw the ball, we get her all excited, and before she starts to froth at the mouth, that's when I try to take her picture if I'm setting it up. What do you think about that? It works for me, but is that something you'd recommend, or do you have a better idea?
No, actually, that would work. It's funny to me how many people, when I go photograph them, they are constantly trying to close their dog's mouth. Close your mouth. And I'm going, but they're smiling. You know, it's not like they're drooling. And if their tongue is hanging out to the side, well, that's who they are. They have this, you know, I guess, dorky dog look to them, but that's who your pet is, and that's why you love them.
I think you've met my dorky dogs there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I often use toys or use treats or use squeakers or just use something that makes them get all that excited and get happy about what we're doing.
Right, right. Yes, okay, so I'm not doing anything that's wrong. I mean, I'm doing what works for me. But whatever works for your kid, sometimes I squeak a ball to get them to cock their head a little bit, you know, things like that. So I'm not teasing them. What I don't do, Michelle, and everybody out there, is say, want a treat? Want a treat? When I don't have one to give them, because then they're never going to trust me or believe me again for anything, much less a picture, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we know about dogs, but I have to ask the question for our feline fanciers out there. Is it hard to get a cat to smile? I mean, I rarely see them with their mouths open, so how do you get a cat to smile?
The tricky part with cats is you either have to capture them in the middle of meowing, but then you get that there's a fine line between they look like they're happy and they're going to eat me, even if they're not.
Right, right.
And so it's
I'm sorry.
Oh, and so it's kind of tricky. You know, to me, for cats, it's usually in their eyes is how they're smiling, because like you said, they don't open their mouth. And so it's getting them when they're usually interested in something or looking at something, just not that terrified cat look.
Right, right. Now, let me, I just recently did some Santa Claus photos last month. So those of you who are listening to this in April, this was obviously recorded in January, and some people brought their cats for Santa Claus photos over at the site that we were doing a fundraiser for one of the rescue groups, and they brought their cats, and they put antlers on these cats' heads, okay? Now, you know, seriously, I mean, dogs for some reason go along with this stuff, but the cats, you could tell, they were ticked off from the moment, you know, that these things were put on, and they had practiced, so they weren't knocking them off with their paws and all that, but I was the elf helper, and I couldn't get the cats to smile. So what I tried to do is the things I normally do for a dog, like squeak a ball. Cats could care less about squeaking balls. And I tried, you know, like blowing on their whiskers, and they were like, not so much. And so what I did was I put my hand in front of them, and I rubbed my face and just jabbed at them a little bit, and one of the cats had this look on its face like, I am going to kill you, and gave this demonic Rosemary's Baby look, and the photographer snapped it, and the parents loved it. So for some reason, cat people like when their cats look in those awkwardy, weird positions, I guess. I don't know.
My guess is it's because that's mostly how cats as a whole look. I mean, you know, as a whole, they're very, I'm sorry, I don't have time for you, go away.
Well, I do notice, again, on cowdreams.com, your website, I switched over to the cats because I do love cats, and I see some beautiful facial expressions, very pensive in some cases, very regal in others. I see that sometimes you don't even focus on the cat's face, but rather their paws or the position that they're in, and that takes away from the need to worry about them smiling. So everybody, if you want to take pictures of your cats, I recommend you go to cowdreams.com, cowdreamz.com, and go to the portfolios and click on cats, which is the second one down, not that they're one under dogs in anybody's mind, and you'll see some adorable pictures and maybe some ideas for you for taking pictures of your cats. So, Michelle, how do you use a flash on your camera without getting that demonic or glow eye look? Or my pet seems to know when the flash is going to go off and turns away at the last second, that perfect shot ruined because she turns her head. She's psychic. She knows that the flash is going off. How do we work around that?
Well, I'm convinced there must be a noise the flash makes, because I run into that problem mainly when shooting cats. You know, their eyes are open, I take the picture, their eyes are still open, I look at the picture, no, they had closed their eyes. So one of the things I found you can try is putting, like, tissue in front of the lens so that the glare isn't as strong and it kind of cuts it down. Another thing to do is if the pet doesn't look directly at the camera but kind of off to the side, or maybe have them turn their head just a little bit to get a nice profile but still mostly the front of their face, that sometimes helps too, because then they're not getting flashed directly in the eye.
Oh, okay, good, good. That's good. I like that. I like that. Those are good. Now, what about for dogs that just are there certain colors of eyes that glow more, or certain species like dogs or cats that have more of an issue with the glow, or does it just have to do with the fact that there's a flash and live with it or get a professional photographer?
It depends. I've noticed if most all dogs that look directly at the flash, they get that green glow. And I found mainly cats with blue eyes get that weird devil glow as well.
Huh.
So I'm not sure why that would be, but that's what I've noticed.
Okay, so blue-eyed dogs, not as much as blue-eyed cats, but dogs looking into the lens much more than them looking kind of away with a soulful profile shot, perhaps.
Right.
Okay. Now, I once heard that the distance that your flash is from the actual lens also contributes to the issue of devil eyes. Is that true?
Probably, because if you could put your lens on the side, your flash on the side, so it's not directly in front of the lens, then you can still photograph your dog or cat from the front, and you'll just have side lighting. Or even if you take the lens and put it above, like some professional photographers have something that mounts the lens off the camera, just angling the flash away from directly looking at the pet will work as well.
Okay, those are good tips. Excellent, excellent. Now, what do you think the best conditions are for taking great photos of your pet? You know, candid versus staged. You know, give us a few tips for making our pets, give us that look that'll make us be so proud at Starbucks to whip out our phones and show the picture.
I think it actually kind of depends. One thing I would recommend is start candid. You know, again, if you are sitting there and your pet is doing something really cute, pull out the camera, capture it. If you then decide, I want to try and have a session, let's make my dog sit, you know, let's make them roll over, let's try and make them do whatever this trick is that they do. Just, again, remember, you need to stay calm. Your pet is going to be very confused as to what you're doing. So I usually say start candid and work from there, because it's always best to capture exactly what's going on, and that way you've got it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Now, what about incorporating multiple species? And I'm not even necessarily thinking dogs and cats or horses and cows, which I'm still looking on your site for a cow picture, but there's not one to be had. But anyway, what's your best advice when taking pictures of humans and a pet?
Well, people have to remember that the best part of them owning the pet is the connection they have to the pet. And nothing is more fun than actually capturing that connection. So if you're trying to take a picture of your friend and their dog, and the dog turns and licks your friend on the cheek, that's your photo.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's not the boring photo of everybody looking at the camera going, okay, are we done yet? It's the laughing. It's the interacting. It's the being cuddly. And, you know, I have photos on my site of my friend kissing her cat, and her cat is doing the really mom, you've got to be kidding me face. And, you know, that speaks more than if the cat were sitting there going, yay, here we go, we're looking at the camera.
Right, right. Or the person looking at the camera. What I find is that when people are taking pictures with their pets, they're so concerned with if the pet is looking that usually the pet's looking, but the person is staring at the dog or saying, you get them in the middle of saying, look, you know, like, and so their face is in this weird, their mouth is in a contorted look. And so, you know, and I always say to people when I'm trying to take their picture as an amateur, don't look at the dog right this second. Look at me. Don't worry about the dog or interact with the dog. Let me snap your picture. Really don't worry about it. And once you can tell the person to stop worrying about what the animal looks like, the picture usually speaks for itself.
Yeah. And the big difference between taking a picture of a person is you're trying to capture their outside. You're trying to make it so when you show them the picture, they go, oh, I look amazing. And when you're photographing a dog or a pet, you're trying to capture what makes them so exciting inside. And so sometimes it's difficult to get the two together.
Yeah, I got you. By the way, I'm still on Cow Dreams. I can multitask, everybody. Look at this. I'm talking, and I'm reading my notes, and I'm looking at photographs on the Cow Dreams site at the same time. The picture you're probably talking about with the look of the cat going, oh, Mom, is that the black and white cat with a little black spot on its nose?
Yes.
Yeah, that's adorable. But if anybody's looking at the site with me, that's picture number 13 under Pets and Their People. But conversely, you can see that the woman was more interested in bonding with the pet than whether she was looking or her smile was great. And I'm also looking at one of a gentleman who's with a cat, which I just think is the best picture because you see the sensitive sides of the gentleman that's loving on his cat. I'm trying to find that one again because I passed. Oh, here it is. It's number 17 on your site. It's a nice gray and white kitty. And you can just feel the love. You don't see his eyes, but you see by the way he's touching the pet and the way the pet is nuzzling into him, how fabulous the relationship is between those guys.
Yes.
Nice
and
job.
Well, what's funny is that's a friend of mine, and when you look at him, I mean, he is basically covered head to toe in tattoos. So he is like the last person
really?
You would expect to see nuzzling his cat and even listening to him talk about his cat. You know, it's like that's almost the love of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was so happy I was able to capture that.
Oh, well, he must have been thrilled with the picture. Okay. Now, I have a question for you. I know I mentioned that technology is probably stealing some of your thunder. But for us people out here who just like to take nice pictures of our pets, let's talk type of camera. There are digital cameras. There are SLR, single-lens reflex cameras, where you have to actually do the focusing, or there's an auto set. There's camera phones, et cetera. In order to be able to get a nice, sharp picture, how do they talk about that? Is it megapixels or, like, what are the numbers if they're going to go out and buy something that people should go looking for to get a camera that might be suitable for taking both still and action shots of their pets?
Well, most people aren't going to blow anything up, you know, to billboard size, so there's no need to get a 24-megapixel camera. And most iPhones now, I think, are 10. And I know the little point-and-shoot I use when I'm just out with my friends and stuff is a 10-megapixel, and it does just fine. And I'd almost recommend that over a digital SLR because most people just want to put it on a program and kind of have some functions to it. They want it to be small so they can carry it around. And most digital SLRs are not that at all.
Oh, okay. All right. So from a price perspective, and I know with phones it may be a little bit different, could you get a decent camera for photographing your pet for $100? Would you have to spend $200? What do you think the price range is these days?
I would say it's probably between $200 and $300, especially since technology keeps advancing and prices of technology keep coming down. So I don't think you need to go spend thousands of dollars on a camera. Unless you want to do professional stuff.
Okay. And by the way, you mentioned that current cell phones have up to 10 megapixel. I guess it's time for me to upgrade, even if my phone is working well, because I think mine's only at 5. And I get good pictures, but, I think the next time, when I went and got my Droid, I was looking for the biggest screen possible to show off pictures, and because my eyesight's kind of wavering a little bit, but also it was how good is the camera. And I originally got a Droid that had, I think at the time, 6 or 8 was the best, and I wound up giving it back because it didn't have a pull-out keyboard, and I had to go down to a 5-megapixel, and I felt so bad. And I apologize to Cassie and Tracy and Happy and Disney and Autumn because I knew that the pictures weren't going to be quite as good. So I'm going to go upgrade real soon because you just told me 10 megapixels is the standard. Woohoo! There you go. So We're talking with Michelle Pellberg. She is the what's your title? Do you have a title?
I just owner, head photographer.
Owner, head photographer of Cow Dreams Photography. She's based in Phoenix, Arizona. I want you to do me a favor, Michelle. Let's go over to the professional pet portraits, because I bet you some people listening didn't even know that there was such a thing as a professional pet photographer. So are there a lot of those out there?
Not so many. There's photographers who kind of do the gamut. You know, they'll shoot people, weddings, whatever. But there's very few of us who are just pet-oriented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do you think the difference is? Is there a special talent or something that separates a pet photographer from a people photographer?
To me, there is. I absolutely am not very good at shooting people at all. And for me, it comes down to I don't understand how I can be looking at a human who understands what I'm saying, yet they're not doing what I'm saying.
That's funny. We have to send them to training class to have their photo taken. That is so funny. You'll tell them to sit or smile or what, and they don't listen to you?
Yeah, they're always, well, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to act? What should I do? Does this look okay? Let me see the photo. Oh, that's horrible. Let's do it again. But when I shoot pets, I can sit there for hours as they run around or they sleep or they do whatever. And I think it's because I know they don't understand me, but I'd rather deal with them.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really. You got to say to the person, here's your sign, you know, like, really, guy, okay. And I know that there's a difference between studio photography, which, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people enjoy with the beautiful background, laying on the beautiful poofy cushion, and what you do with photography. Talk about your style.
Mine is basically on location, and it's just capturing the pet where they are. It's using their home as the background, you know, using their bed as the big fluffy thing they're laying on. It's using their own toys, their own environment. It's where they're most comfortable, because most of the time when you bring a pet to somewhere new, you have to spend an hour as they sniff around. And mm-hmm. No one wants to waste an hour of their day trying to get their pets to hurry up, come on, get comfortable. And so it's just nice when people can look at the photo of their own pet in their own home, and it makes them, I think, more connected.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm at your portfolio on cowdreams.com. I'm in the portfolios, the dog section. You knew I would sniff that out, didn't you? And I see what you're talking about in that regard. You can just tell the relaxed nature and the goofy smiles that you probably wouldn't get if a dog was put into a studio or a park where he was distracted. You just got them being them. You've got dogs with smiles, and I love the Bull Terrier. It looks like a Spuds McKenzie-type dog. It's on slide number 4 on the right, and he's just got this goofy grin on him, but it looks like you shot it right in front of his couch, and who cares, right? I mean, it's what we're looking for is the dog, not the background, right?
Right.
Yeah, I like the bulldog who looks like he's winking at me. I know he's doing that just for me. That's number 10. I'm only telling everybody this because you're going to want to go over to check out some of these pictures, because they are just really adorable. And then there's one here. Hold on. The one where the dog is upside down and his tongue is hanging to the side. He's got curly hair. On number 18, I don't know that you know which one I'm talking about, Michelle, but he must have been rolling around on the bed, which is where he's allowed to be, which allowed you to capture something that his parents will always remember long after he's gone, was a habit that he had. So I like the way your style works. I think that's a really great idea. There's one more I got to tell you that I absolutely adore. It's number, 22. It looks like an Australian Shepherd or a Border Collie. I can't tell quite, so I apologize to the owner, who's digging a hole in the sand, and you must have had the shutter speed really, really fast, because you see the sand flinging out to the back, and his paw is actually blurry, so you caught the action of him actually digging. Really nice.
Well, that's a trick, I mean, people at home can do too if they've got a point-and-shoot camera, is, you know, they've got the little guy running or some sort of action shot. Well, put it on there and capture your dog running. it'll slow down your camera, and you'll be able to actually capture stuff like this to a certain extent.
Yeah, that's awesome. By the way, the last one on the dog one, number 26, it's just a paw. You somehow got close enough to this dog's paw where you see the pigment, you actually see the skin cells. By the way, the dog looks like it has some nice paws. The parent takes good care of these paws, obviously, but what a fabulous picture, obviously, on the carpet of their home, nice and close up. Now, do you get that close, or is that the beauty of having a professional photographer, that you can be far away, not invade the space of the pet, and still get a good shot like this? Which one is it?
This one, I think I actually got that close, but I do have a lens which gives me the ability to, you know, if there's certain dogs who are like, oh, that's personal space, okay, well, I'll get out my longer lens and I can zoom in and look as though I'm this close.
Well, I got to tell you, really fabulous photos. Again, I'm inviting everybody to go take a look at them, because it not only shows the quality of Michelle's work, but it will give you some ideas of photos that you might want to take with your pet, even if you didn't go to a professional pet photographer. Let me ask you this question, and I know you can't quote everybody in the country, but give us an idea of what the going rate is for having a professional pet portrait done and what you should expect to get for that.
Okay. I've kind of found there's two different ways people price things. They either price it really cheap up front, and then when you try and order prints, it's really expensive, or they price it really expensive up front and then do cheaper prints once you order them. And I found that can range anywhere between $50 to $800 for a session. And
wow.
To me, it comes down to, you know, you're going to get what you pay for. So if you say, okay, I only have $100 I can spend on this, okay, well, find someone who charges $100, or, you know, find someone who charges cheaper, but make sure they have the talent you can live with. You don't want to waste your money and get someone who just happens to be someone who owns a camera, who likes pets, and then they give you photos you don't even like.
Yeah, that's a good point. Or you could get the person who does the, I guess that's called the session fee, which is that upfront cost you're talking about, and you spring for that, and then you tell everybody your birthday is coming up and you want to pick out the photo for and let them pay for the photo, the enlargement that's going on your wall. There's lots of ways we can get around paying for the whole thing ourselves, I would assume.
Guess, you know, people probably would do payments too.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I guess sometimes people don't actually order the print, but they would order, like, the digital files. Now, is there a pro or a con to that in terms of ultimately getting a big picture? Is that a mistake?
The biggest issue with doing that is I print everything from my home, and so my computer monitor is calibrated to my printer. But if you take that disc and go to Costco or Walgreens or whomever does the printing, their computer is going to be calibrated differently. So your print might come out a different color than it looks, you know, should look.
Oh,
so your dog can
gotcha.
Come out pink or green or, you know, and then they have a tendency to blame the photographers for that, but it's not us. It's that our computers aren't calibrated to everybody's monitor in the world.
That's a really good point. So, so keep that in mind. If you're going to spend the money for the professional photo and it's the look of the photo as opposed to the color of the photo, you'd be okay if maybe your dog was brown but it came out looking black or vice versa. But if you're really looking for something that will, you know, immortalize your pet, it's probably good to make sure that you're going to a professional who can make sure that the color is true. Yes?
Correct. And they usually professionals have print shops they work with as well. So granted, it might not be, you know, the $2 you'll pay at Costco. It may be more expensive. But again, you have to decide, okay, what's worth more, a photo I like or, you know, a photo I really love.
Right, right. And a photo you're going to put on your Christmas card isn't the same thing as one that you're actually blowing up and putting on your wall either. So, you know, you've got to figure out what it is that you're going to use it for now and in the future as well. I got to ask you, what is your best or most unusual experience that you've ever had photographing a pet? What was it, and what makes it stand out in your head as memorable?
I actually was hired to photograph a dog's first birthday party, which sounded really great at the time. However, I showed up to learn the dog is terrified of people and pets. So most of the birthday party was me photographing all the other guests there, and I think finally towards the end the dog came out, so I was able to get a couple photos of the dog, but it was mostly everything else because the dog was terrified and hiding under the bed.
Oh, that's so funny. When I owned my doggy daycares, it's a rough life. We used to have birthday parties for the pets, and you know, we used to stick a hat on their head and all that, and they never came out looking happy because we were taking them away from running around or getting the treats or whatever it was. And so we get to give, you know, these little instamatic. Do you still use the word instamatic, or am I dating myself on that one?
Oh yeah, like
digital.
The Polaroid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like Polaroid or Kodak or whatever it was. And we would have these photos, and parents didn't really care what the dog looked like because it was their birthday party, but we knew the poor dog looked like, oh, really? Like, seriously? Everybody's eating my doggy treats but me, and why are you putting this thing on my head? And so, yeah, you have to know your pet when you put them into the situation that that you're putting them into, you know?
Yes.
Let's talk about you do a lot of work with local rescues, shelters, adoption agencies. And I know for a fact I admire your work on the Arizona Animal Welfare site, which is aawl.org. I know for a while you weren't doing all the photos, and now it looks like you are because the adoptable dogs look so appealing and like you could plug and play them into your home. They don't look frightened or anything. How do you get a rescue dog to be as happy? I know they're in their own environment because they're at the shelter, but these guys are looking like they're loving you.
Sometimes it depends. You know, there are certain tricks to, okay, turn the dog over and, all right, I got a second of it looking, you know, it wants nothing to do with me, but someone made a noise over my shoulder, their ears poke up, okay, let's take the picture. And
yeah, yeah.
So it's like, okay, good, we got one, let's move on. But for the most part, you know, dogs are friendly, loving creatures. And so I sit on the ground and they come in and they want to give you kisses and they want to sit in your lap and they want to love you and they just are so excited about the attention. And so it's just, you know, kind of capturing them as they're enjoying the 5 minutes of attention as we're doing the photos and capturing who they are and, you know, doing the squeaky toy and giving them cookies and letting them kind of run around and... So that's kind
of it. Yeah, I got you. But I'm looking at the cats now on the aawl.org site, and although they look very cute, you can tell that you were just an interruption to their day in most cases, huh?
Yeah.
Or they get them looking happy. There are some cute ones, but it's tough. I was very I was a little bit bummed, by the way, when I adopted my last little doggy daughter, Happy, from aawl.org. We adopted her so quickly that you never got to photograph her. So I always felt ripped off that I didn't have that, you know, cow dreams photo that you would have taken of her, because even your quick and dirty shots, if you will, of the rescue animals are far better than a lot of the shots I take of my pet. So she never got photographed from you because you just, you know, we swooped her up too quickly. Oh, well, right? I got the real thing instead. I'll have to think about how we might be able to get you to come on by and take a picture of my entire my pack here. Why don't you give me an idea of how listeners can find, in general, a professional pet photographer in their area, and what questions should they ask in order to make sure that they found the right one for them?
I would say go and look on Google. You can type in pet photographer in your area. You know, again, if you find someone who does pets and weddings and does everything else, look at their portfolio. Feel free to ask for references to, you know, how did the shoot come out as a whole? What kinds of things were good? What kind of things were bad? You know, would you recommend them as a pet photographer? Because my theory is I don't want my plumber doing my brain surgery. You know, there's two different... Everyone has a certain job, and when people to me say, oh, I can do everything, well, sure, you might be able to do everything kind of okay, But you want, if you're so in love with your pet that you're willing to do this, you want someone who can do a really great job, not just one that's okay.
Right. And decide in advance whether it's a studio you want, an outdoor shot in your home. Make sure you're asking the questions that are important for you, because some photographers need the security and confines of a controlled environment like a studio, and others just go with it and they just, you know what, throw them out in the field, let me see what I can do for you. And it's all a matter of what you want for your pet. So make sure you ask the questions and get the information before shelling out the money. But I will tell you, looking at your site, I really like your philosophy of capturing them where they're comfortable, because it makes a huge difference in the light in their eyes and the smile on their face. What have I not asked you that you think that our Fervently Speaking listeners should know, Michelle Pellberg?
One of the things that drives me the most crazy is when people come by my booth or wherever I am and look at my work and go, oh, you could never capture my pet, they don't sit down. Well, isn't that your pet's personality? So wouldn't that be what you want me to capture? And people, I think, oftentimes forget, I'm a professional, so I have a camera that works better than, again, your iPhone or your point-and-shoot. And so I'm able to capture your dog running around. It's not going to be just a blur. And so
right,
I think
right.
People oftentimes go, well, my dog's personality is this, so therefore you can't do it, or I have too many, so you can't do it. Well, I'm also more relaxed. This is my job, so I'm more used to it. I'm more calm. I don't get as frazzled as owners do trying to get their pets to do whatever it is they think they need to do.
Right. So I guess my question is, do you tell the owners to go away when you're doing a photography session so they're not influencing their for kids' behavior?
Most of the time I've learned the dogs are more interested in what I'm doing and are ignoring their owners anyway. So I just kind of hang around and photograph it. And, you know, there are times where I'm just like the person next door. I need an extra hand there to help me either guide the pet or keep the pet interested or interact with the pet. So oftentimes it's more helpful for me to have the pet owner there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good deal. Well, I think that we have learned a whole heck of a lot about how to get those picture-perfect pet photos, whether we're taking them ourselves or dealing with a professional. And Michelle Pellberg, Cow Dreams Photography, is in Phoenix, Arizona, but I'm sure she'd be very happy to answer your questions regardless of where you are. So, Michelle, what is the best way for our listeners to get in contact with you?
They can either give me a call. My number is 602-510-1929, or they can shoot me an email, and my email is michelle@cowdreams.com, and that's Michelle with two L's.
And Cowdreams with a Z, Cowdreams, Cowdreamz. Check out her work at cowdreams.com. Michelle Pellberg, thank you so much for sharing this great information with us today. I'm sure that you've made a lot of owners smile, which in turn will help their doggies smile. So thanks for joining us on Fervently Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so very welcome. And speaking of smiling, I wanted to share some information. I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but it's almost the end of January. I know you knew that. That's not what I meant. But February is coming up, and maybe you're not aware that February is Pet Dental Health Month. Yes, there really is such a thing. And it's important that you know about this, because if we want our dogs to have pretty smiles for their photos and not have to Photoshop in the white color or the tooth that they broke off, we want to make sure that they've got great dental health. Here's a statistic that I found very daunting. It's estimated that 80% of people brush their teeth every day. Well, that was daunting to me. I would hoped it would have been 100%. But anyway, it's estimated that 80% of people brush their teeth every day, but obviously far fewer do the same for their pets. It's also estimated that by the age of 3, 80% of dogs and 70% of cats have some form of periodontal disease. And that's according to the American Veterinary Dental Association. Periodontal disease is particularly common in the smaller dog breeds. And most people are not aware of the telltale signs that their pets are experiencing any kind of tooth pain or gum disease. So I want to share some information with you in the hopes that you will begin to take a bigger, quicker, stronger look at your pet's mouth and make sure that you are making it so that they do not fall into one of these statistics. Veterinarians are actually reporting that periodontal disease is the most commonly diagnosed problem in dogs and cats. And the periodontal disease leads to painful infections of the mouth. In severe cases, those infections can spread, and they can actually lead to life-threatening conditions. I've heard that could be diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, kidney disease, and even more. So we want to make sure that you know the telltale signs, and I want you all, if your pet's not with you right this second, as soon as you see them, if your pet's going to allow it, open its mouth and look inside. And look for the warning signs, and they include bad breath, not because they ate an onion, by the way. I'm talking about that really funky smell, bad breath, red or swollen gums, a yellowy-brown crustiness of tartar around the gum line, and pain or bleeding if you touch the gums or mouth. Now, if you see any of these things, you should seek veterinary care because your pet is going to have some distress. In the case of dogs, you also want to look for broken teeth, especially if your dog is outdoor a lot or chews on rocks. Like one of my my previous dogs, Madison, used to chew on rocks, and she would break her teeth. And according to the veterinary dental experts out there, aggressive chewing on hard objects, even something like a cow hoof, is a primary cause of broken teeth in dogs. Now, for cats, you might take a look in the mouth and you might see some lesions. They're called resorptive lesions. And they're the most common tooth disease for cats. So about 28% of domestic cats develop at least one of them during their lifetime, and they are painful. So again, if you see any of these things, or if your dog is not chewing properly on its food or is avoiding its food, you really ought to ask the vet to take a look at his mouth, not just in February, okay, which is Pet Dental Health Month, but ever. So one of the best things that you can do to ensure proper dental health for your pet is to take your pet to the vet for a dental exam, a specific dental exam. There are actually vets out there that specialize in dental work for pets. So you really want to make sure that they're giving them a good dental exam. If when you go to the vet, they're not looking at your dog's mouth, you know, if you're taking them for their regular vaccinations or for any other issue, make sure that you ask them to do so. They'll be able to tell pretty quickly. Don't wait for an annual checkup if you suspect there's a problem. But I'm going to recommend that you begin a dental care regimen at home. And it's really pretty simple to do. Brush your pet's teeth. Yeah. I mean, if you're one of those people who, of the 80% of the people who actually brush their teeth once a day, try brushing your pet's, your dog, your cat's teeth. If you don't want to do it once a day, do it once a week, but start doing it. You can introduce a brushing program gradually, and over time, it will become a bonding experience. Make sure that you're not over-restraining your pet, and keep the brushing sessions short and positive. Hold your small dog or cat in your lap and praise and reassure your pet throughout the entire process to make sure that they know that they haven't done anything wrong, but this is actually a good thing you're doing for them. Probably the best way to start getting them used to having you brush their teeth is to initially dip your finger into something like beef bouillon for dogs or the water from a tuna can for cats because they'll like the taste. And they'll readily let your fingers into their mouths. Rub your finger that's got the beef bouillon or the tuna water gently over the pet's mouth and teeth. And, again, make that initial session short and positive. Don't torture them. You're just getting them used to the process. You're going to gradually introduce a gauze or some type of fabric over your finger and then gently rub that finger over the teeth in a circular motion. You're just getting them used to the idea. And then finally, you can introduce a soft toothbrush that's specifically designed for pets. You don't want the bristles to be too hard, so use a sensitive or ultra-soft brush. Or there are actually specialized brushes that are designed for pets. And also, things that look like thimbles, but they're rubber, and they have little bumpies on them, like little finger cots, and that actually serves to massage the gums as well as clean between the teeth. And they actually like how that feels once they're used to it. About a week ago, I was with my niece, Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. And she was brushing her dog, Bear's. Hi, Bear. Bear's teeth. And she was so thrilled that he came to her to have this done, almost as if it was a play or a training type of a situation where he knew that this was something that he enjoyed doing with her. And she was thrilled about it. He looked happy about it, too. So if you do it the right way, your dog is going to welcome your toothbrushing sessions. By the way, don't use people toothpaste, because it could upset your pet's belly. So they actually have specialized toothpaste that have beef or chicken flavor for dogs or fish flavor for cats that they will, again, accept in their mouth much more readily than just some, you know, blah-tasting brush. Other helpful tools that you can use in your pet's oral hygiene program. There are specially formulated foods that have been proven effective in combating plaque and tartar buildup. You want to look for the seal of acceptance from the Veterinary Oral Health Council, which is an organization that was initiated by the American Veterinary Dental Society to guide consumers. That symbol appears on products that meet the defined standards for plaque and tartar control in dogs and cats. So specially formulated foods can help to be a part of your dental health program for your pet. There are rinses and wipes and water additives that you can look into as well, but don't let them replace the toothbrushing. The toothbrushing is very, very important. I've seen recently on those As Seen on TV commercials something called Plaque Attack Spray. Maybe you've seen it too. And you spray it into your dog's mouth or on their teeth, and I don't know, it's 1995. But wait, there's more. If you order now, you'll get two. Well, there's no evidence that that works. And I repeat, nothing is better than the brushing scenario. But, you know, give it a try. Do something. Something is absolutely better than nothing. One of the things that I like to give my dogs to chew on is a Nylabone dental dinosaur. It's like a plastic bone that's got hard nubs on them. And as they're chewing, it's massaging their gums, dislodging the plaque, making sure that they are, that they are not just putting gunky stuff in their mouth. It's something that's not going to sit within their teeth. The Nylabone dental dinosaurs also can be part of your pet's dental health regimen. So, as I said, February is Pet Dental Health Month, and lots of veterinarians are offering discounts for dentals during that month, so you can get your dog's teeth cleaned. Now, I'm not advocating or not advocating getting your dog's teeth professionally cleaned. There are some considerations. It can be relatively expensive, although not as expensive as dealing with any of the maladies that might result as a result of having periodontal disease that I've mentioned before. For older dogs, you may want to be sensitive to the fact that the pets need to be anesthetized in most cases, and older dogs don't always do well under surgery. Also, ask your vet if your vet's going to be doing the cleaning or if a vet tech is going to, because in some cases it's a vet tech, and then their particular level of experience and skill will determine how good the dental is. I've also heard about these anesthesia-free practitioners. Well, the dental cleaning skill level ranges from a simple tooth scraper with little or no training to former licensed dental hygienists for people. There's no certification or regulation out there. So the animal handling skill, which is extremely important to make your pet feel comfortable, also varies greatly, and you want to make sure that you get references in advance. At the end of the day on that, you're the only quality inspector, so make sure you're happy with the job that's being done. And make sure that if you're using this type of practitioner, that they wear clean gloves and that they clean and sterilize their equipment between each of the cleanings. If you want more information about Pet Dental Health Month or any of the options that I just spoke to you about, you can Google Pet Dental Care or Pet Dental Health Month on the internet, or you can obviously get in touch with me at topdog@ferventlyspeaking.com. That's FURFERVENTLYSPEAKING.com. Just be aware that plaque begins to form within 24 hours of even a professional dental, so get on that brushing regimen ASAP. So it looks like we have come to the end of another fun and fur-filled hour of Fervently Speaking, which is every second and fourth Wednesday, hump day, on blogtalkradio.com, the Boomer and Babe station. So I'm going to have to say bye-bye and bow-wow to you. I hope that you and your pets have had a wonderful first month of the year. We'll look forward to speaking with you again in a couple of weeks. And until then, this is the Top Dog, Eileen Proctor, America's Canine Connections Coach and the voice of Pet Rescue, reminding you that adoption is the best option. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to Fervently Speaking with your host, Top Dog Eileen Proctor. To find out more about today's topic or to suggest one for a future show, email topdog@ferventlyspeaking.com. That's topdog@FURVENTLYspeaking.com. And be sure to tune in every second and fourth Wednesday of the month for another fun and fur-filled episode right here on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk Radio. Fervently Speaking is a production of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.